Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And we're coming off of Valentine's Day here, but the war is still sort of continuing. We rolled through, what, five or six topics?
Yeah.
On Valentine's issues, from the science of lingerie to what happens in a passionate kiss.
To the color pink.
The color pink.
And what it's hiding.
Yeah. And it's hiding quite a bit, as we explored. But today we're gonna really tackle the final piece of the puzzle and one of the big tropes about romantic love.
Love at first sight.
Yes.
I saw him from across the room. He looked at me. I looked at him. Sparks flew. We married just 24 hours later.
Is that your story? Is
no.
That
But, you know, that's a big Hollywood trope, you know, like the you're in a bar, you're somewhere across the room, and, you know, you lock eyes.
Yeah, time stands still.
Yes, yes, you're outside of time all of a sudden. And that's not to say that love at first sight couldn't exist. I suppose there's a possibility, but in some ways, today's episode is a bit of a Trojan horse. Like, we're saying, hey, does love at first sight exist? But really what's inside that Trojan horse is this idea that when you do lock eyes, there's a kind of autobiography of things going on to that, leading up to that moment, that are influencing the way that you're even locking eyes with that person and assessing them. And that there's probably a lot more going on than just this instant palpable chemistry.
Indeed. Now, I think it's probably a good point in the podcast to just sort of establish our own takes on this going into it.
Okay.
I definitely feel like my take changed a bit in exploring the information.
Mm-hmm.
But where were you on the idea of love at first sight prior to this research?
Well, I always feel like this is just a case of semantics. Mm-hmm. Like love, lust, intrigue, interest, you know, these are all sort of things that come up when you're in a room and there are strangers, and there's always an excitement when you do lock eyes with someone that you feel like you have a connection with.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I've never thought of it as like this sort of, you know, you just got swept off your feet and you locked eyes thing.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like for my part, it's definitely a trope that I always kind of look down on a bit. And maybe even if I was feeling a bit hot on the topic, I would say, that the idea of love at first sight cheapens love, mm-hmm. Just kind of cheapens the real sustained love that one has that you build over time. You know, it's kind of like saying, hey, it took me 10 years to paint. Look at this painting I did. And then someone saying, hey, yeah, I just learned to paint and I made a masterpiece. You know, like, no, you didn't make a masterpiece. You know, like the thing that I've been building all this time, like this is surely more substantial than this brief look at a bar.
And yeah, there's some things to this.
It is. Yeah, that's the thing about it. Like now, having looked at the research, which we're going to discuss in earnest here, I have to give a little more credence to the idea or at least the experience of love at first sight. I'm not saying, I'm at this point, I'm no longer going to say you were not feeling love at first sight. All right, you were feeling something, and if you want to classify it as love at first sight, go ahead.
It could have been, something and it bloomed into love.
Right.
Is that what I'm getting from you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, before we kind of go into the different aspects of this, I just wanted to roll out some statistics. There's a 2000 Gallup poll that found that while 75% of Americans believe that there is such a thing as the one true love, overall, only 52% of people think love could occur at first glance. And here's the interesting thing about this. If you break this down by gender, 55% of men think that there's love at first sight compared to 49% of women.
Huh.
That's
interesting.
It's a slight uptick, but that's an uptick nonetheless.
Yeah, I would say it seems significant. I mean, especially, if you're standing outside of the figures, one might be tempted to expect the female percentage to be higher. You know?
Well, I think that would be the stereotype.
That would
right?
be the
like,
stereotype, yeah.
Women just can't, help love and love.
Yeah.
Right? But,
maybe it's a situation of the stereotype exists and men are more likely to buy into the stereotype. And women, of course, know that having the brain of a woman know that it's not quite so cut and dry.
I don't know. I just don't even know.
Okay.
Now, Ilea Malik-Pines, a psychologist at Ben-Gurion University in Israel, found in a survey that a small fraction, 11% of people in long-term relationships, said that they began their courtships with love at first sight. So, and that is pretty small, and that's just that area, and particularly there's a sort of cultural lens, too, that we're looking at things when we talk about love at first sight. But still, there are some people who say that's how my relationship began.
And begun is key here, because as we're going to discuss, a lot of this falls into an exploration of the timeline of romantic attachment, the timeline of, say, any successful or doomed relationship, however you want to look at it, and how it transpires and then how we look back at it.
Yeah, and timeline is important. I'm glad that you brought that up, too, because when we talk about love at first sight, again, it's a case of semantics. Because if you look at someone's work like biological anthropologist Helen Fisher, she might say, okay, that could be love at first sight a couple seconds up to maybe 3 minutes, depending on what's going on in the brain and how primed the brain is. And this is where we really need to turn to, some good old MRIs and take a look into the brain to figure out what's going on.
Indeed. So let's go back to that, the sort of the bar trope, right? Like what's happening when person A and person B suddenly lock glances and there's that magical moment and the music starts up.
Oonst, 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 oonst.
Okay, it could be some oonsty music.
Yeah.
But essentially what's happening is your eyes are locking on, but your brain is locking on to a target. It's like a scene in Top Gun, right? Where you're trying to lock the missiles before you fire the heat-seeking missile at the enemy MiG, right? When our brains do this, we're sucking away from other faculties. We're sucking away environmental stimuli, our processing of time. We're using some of the same parts of the brain that are also involved in time perception. So it begins to, it feels like time is standing still. It feels like everything else is sort of fading, into the periphery, because it sort of is from just a computational side of things.
Yeah. Especially if you consider what is going on with the chemistry in the brain, because as I had mentioned before, you're in the room full of people who are strangers. There's already an element of intrigue. You lock those eyes and maybe when you do that, that triggers the release of dopamine in the brain's reward system, which in turn may motivate you to approach that person. Because if we've learned anything about dopamine and the reward system, we know that There's a kind of breadcrumb trail being made here. And the more you can revisit it and get more dings of that dopamine, well, the happier your reward system is. So, hey, why not go and talk to that person and see if you can increase the dopamine in your brain?
Yeah, all under the duress of elation, passion, and this cultural idea of romantic love, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of what is setting the stage for your brain for this idea of love. Because if you look at this meta-analysis study, it's called the Neuroimaging of Love, and it was conducted by Syracuse University's professor Stephanie Ortega, it found that when people are engaged in this sense of love, that there are 12 areas of the brain that work together to release euphoria-inducing chemicals like dopamine, oxytocin, adrenaline, and vasopressin. And then that's what is culminating to express that feeling of love. And according to this meta-analysis, this can happen as early as 0.2 seconds of visual contact.
All right. So you're locking in on target, and you can even think of the dopamine kicking in, the various other hormones we're mentioning, as kind of the ignition behind the heat-seeking missile. Like, go out there, go to the next stage, right?
Yeah.
And it also interesting in this study, they pointed out that these euphoria-inducing drugs that are suggesting love, it's akin to using cocaine.
Yeah, and that's what's interesting about this. There's this idea that newly found love sparks in areas of the brain that are associated with euphoria-inducing drugs. So mm-hmm. that's that feeling of cocaine. And also, just as a side note, this is why when new love crashes, burns, and you are withdrawing from that person, you feel that sense like you're withdrawing from a drug.
Yeah.
Because no longer is that source available to you.
Yeah, you're coming off of your fix and you're going to need another fix. It also draws back to our previous episode that we did, I believe, on the dark side of serotonin.
Mm-hmm.
So any of these chemicals, you know, even though we talk about like the love hormone, the feel good neurotransmitter, et cetera, like these are, the brain is a complex system. In various parts of the brain, various neurotransmitters are pulling at least double duty. And so there, even though there is a positive spin on any of these interactions, there's also a potential negative one.
Indeed. Now, again, you just have to kind of look at it as this, again, this idea of, you know, split second love or love at first sight is perhaps more like there's some chemistry going on in the brain that is setting the stage for love. And Helen Fisher, again, she is that biological anthropologist, and her TED talk called The Brain in Love, she says, there are now 3 academic articles in which they've looked at this attraction, which may only last for a second, but it's a definite attraction. And either this same brain region, this reward system, or the chemicals of that reward system are involved. In fact, she says, I think animal attraction can be instant. You can see an elephant instantly go for another elephant, and I think that this is really the origin of what you and I call love at first sight.
Yeah, we're talking about animal favoritism here. Mate choice, female choice, sexual choice. Instantly what comes to my mind is just like 2 beetles dancing around each other on a tree limb. And then ultimately you can say that any human interaction with its levels of human complexity is essentially the same thing. It's that little dance to see if these 2 pieces are going to lock up.
Yeah, in some ways it's kind of thin slicing, right?
Yeah.
Assessing the situation. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about imprinting, but we're not going to talk about Twilight the movie and imprinting. We promise.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product, and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
All right, we're back. I know you just promised we weren't going to talk about Twilight, but of course you're referring to the imprinting that occurs when a werewolf sees a half-vampire baby for the first time
right,
falls in love with it.
Right.
Just to clarify for anyone out there who's like, I don't know what they're talking about with Twilight, but that's,
right.
That's
and,
it.
And the same thing happens in humans. Well, no, it's a little bit more complicated. Imprinting refers to a really critical period of early time in an animal's life when it forms an attachment and develops a concept of its own identity. So birds and mammals are born with a pre-programmed drive to imprint on their mother, and this sort of imprinting provides animals with information about, hey, this is my mom, or this person or thing or animal is really important to me, and later on, this can determine who they will find attractive when they reach adulthood, or who they pair up with. And there are a couple of studies that actually support this in humans and in other animals.
Yeah, I mean, we're ultimately talking about a predisposition to fixate on particular types of people. You know, and the exact parameters are obviously going to vary a lot. It might relate to race, like you say, hair color. But ultimately, it's kind of providing a rough template of what you're supposed to look for in a mate.
Yeah, and just so you have an idea of how easy it is to imprint in the animal world, I wanted to bring up the example of Austrian naturalist Konrad Lorenz, who became the first to sort of codify this, right, mm-hmm. and establish the science behind imprinting. And he found that when baby birds emerged from their eggs, they'd imprint on whatever animated thing was in front of them. And so he tested this out. He himself became the thing that they imprinted upon, and they followed him around. And He became the object of their affection. And then he also would put in other mother substitutes, and he found that those birds would just as easily attach to inanimate objects and oddities, such as a pair of gum boots.
Oh, yes, this is the guy you'd see the images of him trekking around in the boots. Yeah.
Yes, a white ball and even an electric train. And again, this is if it was presented at the right time when they were emerging and trying to figure out something to focus on and to, again, harness their energy into figuring out what was important, who was important, and who they were.
Yeah, I mean, from a biological standpoint, like life is essentially a matter of scaling this mountain of survival. To fulfill your genetic mission, you have to reach the top of it. And imprinting is sort of a way of finding those first hand and footholds as you make the ascent.
Yeah. Now, in humans, it's perhaps not as clear cut, but there are a couple of studies. There's a 2003 study called Sexual Imprinting and Human Mate Choice. And this the abstract actually says, quote, "We report that homogamy in humans is attained partly by sexual imprinting on the opposite sex parent during childhood. We hypothesize that children fashion a mental model of their opposite sex parent's phenotype that is used as a template for acquiring mates." Phenotype meaning like the physical characteristics. Mm-hmm. And it goes on in this abstract to say, "To disentangle the effects of phenotypic matching and sexual imprinting, adopted daughters and their rearing families were examined. Judges found significant resemblance on facial traits between daughters' husbands and their adopted fathers. Furthermore, this effect may be modified by the quality of the father-daughter relationship during childhood. Daughters who received more emotional support from their adoptive father were more likely to choose mates similar to the father than those whose father provided a less positive emotional atmosphere." And this, to me, feels like one of those Adoy moments, yeah. Because you see this a lot.
Oh,
really,
yeah, this is
the
classic, I married my mother, I married my father. And also just the myth of Oedipus, marrying your mother, murdering your father.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because as we'll look at in the next section here on gene compatibility or genetic compatibility, it's a fine line here. You want someone who's similar enough mm-hmm. in the traits that you admire in a parent because, hey, your parent was attracted to that parent and had successful offspring. The same thing could happen for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you want enough genetic diversity to strengthen any offspring that you might have.
Yes. And if I can just return to the Top Gun analogy, it's identifying the enemy plane. There's a certain type of plane you need to shoot down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor Goose.
I have theories about Goose. I really wanted to see a sequel to Top Gun where Goose lived and was reprogrammed by the Soviets. To battle Maverick.
Now that would have been a movie that I really would have wanted to have seen. Oh, well, you never know. Maybe there'll be some sort of reboot.
Maybe.
Directed by Robert Lamb.
Yeah.
All right. But in terms of genetic compatibility, again, we can look at the animal world. There's a study from April 2009, the issue of the journal Genetic, in which researchers from Cornell University found that female fruit flies are biologically primed to sense which males are more genetically compatible with them and to make more eggs after mating with good matches than they do with less compatible matches. And so these findings suggest that the females can somehow judge a potential mate upon their first meeting and then biologically react to boost the chances of producing, again, successful offspring. So, and we bring this up because we want to kind of say that whole love at first sight thing isn't just, okay, you locked eyes and this person kind of has these traits that mm-hmm. you admire. There's other stuff going on too.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on underneath the surface. And with the fruit fly situation, like a lot of that is also related to avoiding hooking up with a close relative. Which obviously is, genetically speaking,
right.
not a wise move for any organism. But then the human crossover for this is pretty spectacular. Now with the fruit flies, I mean, a lot of this is as simple as programming to keep one fruit fly from mating with a close relative and stirring up the genetic ramifications of that.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we look at how this plays out in the human sphere, we see a lot more complexity, depending how complex you want to make sniffing another person sweat or engaging in a makeout session with them.
Yeah, again, it's complex biochemistry, and the fruit flies are exhibiting this in humans. We have seen in studies exhibit this when they sniff the sweaty armpits of t-shirts worn by the opposite sex. Again, this is like sort of gender normed studies mm-hmm. that we're talking about here. But the idea is that women were more likely to select a mate with someone who had a far different genetic expression than their own.
Because again, you need genetic diversity. That's going to result in stronger offspring, and that again is part of the whole genetic mission of any organism. So we begin to have this picture emerging of it's like multiple scans are going on.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of robot-y, computer-y Star Trek scans, almost, if you want to use that analogy. And then you almost have different departments that are reporting back on how things are matching up. Like, all right, does she look like our mother? Yep, looks like our mother. All right, we're good to go on that. And then you have the other department. And they're like, all right, well, we're making some sense of the genetic compatibility here. We're taking in the smells. We may have to take in some of the saliva as well, and we're going to see what the test results there are.
Right.
So there are kind of these different. It's almost like trying to get legislation passed or something.
Yeah, you're right. And if you think about it that way, that locking eyes across the room. All right, dopamine. All right, now go inch forward and meet the person to get more dopamine. Mm-hmm. Now further assess, and then yes, at the end of the night there might be the swapping of the spit to further assess whether or not you're compatible.
And in our mind, it's all playing out like a French romance movie. But yeah, under the surface, it's a lot more complex weeding out going on.
Yeah, and there's another element here that is pushing the needle a bit when we talk about this love at first sight, and it's called assortive mating. And we already know that people tend to gravitate toward each other based on their shared socioeconomic and education backgrounds, right? So have you ever heard the phrase, birds of a feather fly together?
Yes.
Yeah, it's sort of like this. Like, you're seeking out someone who is like you. And we know that we're doing this even when we're not trying to go after some sort of relationship. We just tend to do that, you know, with each other when we're connecting with one another.
Yeah, I mean, people you can have conversations with about the things that matter to you. You end up engaging with people that are kind of from the same background or have similar interests.
Well, it turns out that there may even be a body fat component to a sort of mating. There's a 2007 study in which the researchers who were based at Rowett Research Institute and the University of Aberdeen measured the body composition of 42 couples using a sophisticated technique called dual energy X-ray absorptiometry. And the results show that the amount of body fat in one person was proportionally very similar to that of their partners. And so there's this idea that not only do we try to find similarities in our socioeconomic backgrounds and what our taste in music are, but maybe even the shapes of our bodies.
Yeah, now the study did point out that it's unclear, though, exactly how these associations come about. I mean, do the social activities of overweight and obese people just merely coincide? Do the social activities of active runners, do they just happen to coincide? You met this person while you were engaging in similar activities that have an impact on your physical fitness, or vice versa? So are you just more likely to meet people that have a similar body index?
Yeah, and I kind of feel like across the board, obviously, you don't see this. I mean, you mm-hmm. see plenty of examples of couples who don't match up in terms of body type or body fat.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Paula Abdul that pointed out that opposites attract, right? That was the big track.
Wow. Yes, it was Paula Abdul. But as we've discussed before, opposites, they do attract, but you still have to have enough there in common.
Right.
In order to make that whole dynamic work.
So again, it kind of comes back to this idea of multiple committees weighing in. And so one committee might say, they're a lot shorter than we are. I'm not sure this is going to match up. And they'll say, well, but look at the stats on the genetic compatibility. Look at the stats on whether she looks like our mother. All these things are looking good, so we're gonna maybe pass on worrying about height or body mass index in this case. Yeah, a lot of this dates back to 1970 study from social psychologist Zick Rubin, where he took college student couples, gave them each of them a survey, asking questions about their relationship, and then put them in a room, measured their gaze, and what he found was you saw stronger connections of love, or at least reported love, on the questionnaires, matching up with more prolonged eye contact. So the more, and again, this is another one of those that sounds pretty obvious and seems like an overstatement of the obvious when we spell it out like this, but the idea that if you're making more eye contact between these couples, there's more love present.
Yeah.
It's a stronger connection.
Now, I also wanted to mention that just the bare gaze when you're looking out across the room at someone, if you're giving a really direct gaze, and the person is perceiving that, already the fact that you're trying to get that person's attention is going to ratchet up your attractiveness one notch. It's kind of like this mutual admiration society, right? So if you both are kind of like baseline attracted to each other and you notice that you're looking at each other, there's that, oh, you're looking at me? I must be attractive to you, and so on and so forth. Now, this is, again, one of those adoring moments, but if you smile,
yes,
that's going to give even more, confirmation that, yes, you should pursue this. If you do not smile, of course, this is going to tell the person that you're not interested, unless you look away and don't smile. There's something to this. Like, you maybe catch eyes and you look away and you're not smiling. You're being a little bit mysterious or aloof.
Yeah, and this was actually proven out in a 2006 study from the Institute of Neuroscience and Psychology at the University of Glasgow, in case anyone just really wanted some hard science to back that up. It also reminds me of a story that a friend of mine told me, and that maybe some people can relate to. So my wife, a couple of friends, they were traveling on a subway in New York, and one of the friends in this group has this, when she feels nervous, she smiles. And is and makes eye contact with people.
Yeah.
So they were leaving like a restaurant or something, and like some guy was interested, and she wasn't interested, but she was kind of like nervous. So she made eye contact and smiled, and like the dude ended up following them on the train for like a long portion of their leg back to where they were staying, to the point where they had to like stop him and say, "Look, you just need to go on because there's just a nervous tick with her."
Well, also there is, I'm sure that Stuff Mom Never Told You has probably covered this before too. There's a cultural expectation that women should smile back.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Because there's the whole, one of the many bad things you can say to a female is say, "Hey, honey, why don't you smile more," right?
Generally
coming from maybe like older gentlemen at a fruit stand or something, right?
Yeah, you get stuff like, "You'd look a lot prettier if you were smiling," and then you just want to punch the person.
Yeah, because it matching up with this date, it's kind of like they're saying, "I would want to mate with you more if you would smile for me now."
Yeah.
Like, that's horrible.
Right. Do my bidding right now. I don't know you, but right now I want you to smile. so that, again, is part of those unconscious communications that we're throwing at each other all the time. Now, Cheryl Murphy, writing for Scientific American, looks at the gaze and the smiling in a little bit more depth, and she reports that in one study, Kellerman et al. Took 72 unacquainted undergraduate students, and they split them into male-female pairs and then studied the effects that 2 minutes of uninterrupted mutual eye contact had on their feelings toward one another. And in their study, they found that if the two strangers gazed into each other's eyes for those 2 minutes, they later reported that they had increased feelings of passionate love and affection towards the other person. And then another phase of the experiment had the pairs of students interact in other ways, like looking at the partner's hands or counting blinks of their partner, but it was mutual eye contact that best fanned the flames of attraction.
I feel like we've discussed this in terms of working and collaborating in our modern age as well. Like just at a very basic level, and I think most people can relate to this, like having that eye contact with the people you work with, or even, family, etc. Like that makes all the difference in your ability to sort of rein in how you're supposed to be feeling about any given situation.
Well, it's very powerful, and I think we talked about this before when we were talking about performance artists and Maria Abramovich.
Oh yes, maybe that's where this came up.
Yeah, she had performance at, I think it was at MoMA in New York.
I think so. The Artist is Present?
The Artist is Present. There's a great documentary on it. And people would just sit across from her, I think for about 8 minutes, uninterrupted, just gazing at each other. And people were going bananas over this. They were crying. I mean, they were, it was almost like they were having these mystical or even ecstatic experiences just by being looked at by someone.
Indeed, because you wonder, like, you know, I mean, if you just self-evaluate, like, how much time in our day goes by without any significant eye contact going on?
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of an artificial environment for us to be discussing this because we have to make a lot of eye contact during the recording of the podcast.
And yet we look away. I mean, like,
we
you
do.
And I don't, like, full on, like, stare at each other the entire time because that would just be so weird if I was doing that. Like, you know, that would be very intense.
I feel like there's a timer in my head. So it's like I make eye contact with anybody, not just you. Well, basically anybody except, like, you know, my wife or my child, or maybe a cat. I don't know. There's like a timer going off. It's like, all right, that's enough eye contact. You have to look away because if you don't, too much sustained eye contact is maybe sending too much of a crazy vibe or something.
I actually have an egg timer eye contact that I set. Yeah.
Well, that's a good method. I need a more solid method than just sort of trying to figure out how much time has passed in my head.
You can borrow mine.
Okay.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about the gaze a bit more and the difference between the love and lust gaze.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Continuing to explore the question, does love at first sight exist? Or more to the point, what is the thing that exists that we tend to classify as love at first sight?
Yeah, and Helen Fisher gives, an interesting answer to why this might exist in the first place. And of course, she's coming at it from an evolutionary angle. And she's co-author of the study Reward, Motivation, and Emotion Systems Associated with Early Stage Intense Romantic Love. And she again looks at these this sort of constellation of neural systems involved with the feeling of love. And her idea is that we're marshaling these resources really quickly and efficiently because it could be a mating shortcut. She says, quote, even love at first sight is a basic mammalian response that developed in other animals, and our ancestors inherited this in order to speed up the mating process. So if you think about it, our ancestors did not have Match.com at their disposal, and they only had, you know, maybe 30 or 40 years of a lifespan in the first place. So there wasn't a lot of, like, this is going to be my first marriage sort of talk.
Yeah, so as Fisher and her co-researchers pointed out in that study, we're talking about early stage intense romantic love, and we're associating that with subchordal reward regions, all this rich with dopamine, as we discussed, and we see that romantic love engages brain systems associated with the motivation to acquire a reward.
Yeah, she says about romantic love, it enables you to focus your mating energy on just one at a time, conserve your mating energy, and start the mating process with this single individual. And she said, I think of all the poetry that I've read about romantic love, what sums it up best is something that is said by Plato over 2,000 years ago. He said, the god of love lives in a state of need. It is a need. It is an urge. It is a homeostatic imbalance, like hunger and thirst. It's almost impossible to stamp out.
Yeah, I mean, we call it love sickness for a reason. You feel love sick. It's, I mean, you begin to almost to really bodily suffer out of this longing.
Yeah, and if anyone who's ever been a teenager and had any sort of love interest knows what that feels like, right? You can kind of feel that in the pit of your stomach right now. Now, there are some who may, you know, say, look, this is all very well, and perhaps we are neurally put together to quickly identify feelings of love. However, maybe this framing of it has more to do with the fallacy of memory.
Yes, as we've discussed in a few different podcast episodes, our memories are not these solid, fixed items. They're not little stone sculptures stored away in a drawer. If anything, they are clay sculptures stored away in a drawer. And every time we get a memory out of that drawer, it's susceptible to change. We project our present onto these little fragments of our past and then reform our past and reform our present in doing so.
Yeah, and when you do that, you're strengthening those neural connections, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why sometimes people feel very like, yes, I know this happened exactly the way I think it happened, because they've taken that memory out over and over again and revisited it. And so they can quickly get to it. And there's this certainty that they feel because of these neural connections, when in fact there is a lot of fallacy in memory. And we've talked about this before. Donna Jo Bridge, a postdoctoral fellow in medical social sciences and a co-author of the study on how the brain reframes the past to fit the present, says, quote, When you think back to when you met your current partner, you may recall this feeling of love and euphoria, but you may be projecting your current feelings back to the original encounter with this person.
Yeah, I mean, our lives are experienced in a sort of storytelling way. We create a story. We are the center of our story, and we are constantly tweaking the narrative, even though we don't realize it.
Yeah, and that's what I think is interesting about that moment, that across the room you lock eyes and there's this idea that all these disparate elements of your autobiographical past may coalesce in this person. In other words, this sort of spreadsheet of what you find interesting in another person, mm-hmm. this person might check off some of those boxes. And it might feel like, this is the one. And if that is successful, if you see that relationship through, then through the power of narrative and the way that we reframe our experiences, then all of a sudden that becomes, yes, it was love at first sight, even though maybe it was just intrigue.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, you're probably going to be more likely to skew positive on your reframing of your personal story. I mean, for the most part, we want to live a happy narrative life. So you're gonna tweak it. I mean, we all experience this every day. I feel like I do. It's like I'll think back on something in the past experience, past something I did, maybe something I missed but don't get to do anymore. And then I have to question. It's like, well, was it really all positive, or were there some negatives in there that I'm kind of omitting in my current narrative?
You know, there was recently a study that came out, and my apologies because I don't have the name of the study in front of me, but basically it was a study of 10 different languages from 24 different types of media, like literature and Twitter and so on and so forth. And they had hundreds of billions of words. And they went through this painstaking process of trying to figure out the sort of qualitative narrative here. Is there a sort of more positive words or less positive words that we use? And there does seem to be this positive skew to language, no matter what language they were looking at. People were using more positive terms. And so the idea there is that you're trying to survive, and storytelling and narrative is like a very basic way in which we do survive. Mm-hmm. And so overwhelmingly, the message becomes, it's going to be okay. You know,
yeah.
Like, you're going to survive, you're going to get through this. And so it's no wonder that when we revisit our past histories, we do the same thing unconsciously. We're shaping them in a more positive light.
Yeah, and indeed, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, I guess sometimes I maybe if I'm going to engage with the idea of something like love at first sight, not on a scientific level, but on like a just sort of a loftier level, you know, I can think of it maybe in terms of the present reaching back through the past,
mm-hmm.
you know, because ultimately our experience of time is more or less an illusion. If you look at everything as a constant, you can say, well, there's not really a timeline of my relationship with the person I love. It's a constant. And so there's ultimately nothing wrong with applying the emotions and the importance that builds up over time, applying mm-hmm. that back to the beginning. Because ultimately, it's, you know, we're not talking about a timeline. We're talking about a constant singular thing.
And hey, this is personal history, right?
Yeah.
So we already know that we're skewing stuff in terms of what's realistic and what's sort of made up fairyland fun stuff that we like to throw in our personal narratives. Now, when we get back to though that idea of the gaze and mm-hmm. how this all first coalesced and happened, all these things unconsciously bubbling beneath, there is a way that we can kind of do some eye tracking to figure out whether or not that first moment has more to do with love or lust.
Yes. And again, this is another one of those studies that might seem like an outrageous overstatement of the obvious backed up by science. But yeah, there's the lustful gaze. And there is a more or less loving gaze. And we probably have some pretty firm ideas in our mind about what those gazes look like. Like the lustful gaze is a cartoon coyote with its eyes bulging out and its tongue lolling, and maybe it's going like, brrr, the noise.
Ooga,
that's the one, yeah. So there's that. And then there's the more loving, lost in your potential lover's eyes kind of look.
I'm lost in love and I don't know why.
I don't know that one.
I don't know either. It's in my head, but I do not know the artist. All right. So, of course, there's a report called Love is in the Gaze, published in Psychological Science, male and female students from the University of Geneva. They viewed a series of black and white photographs of people they had never met. And in the first experiment, participants looked at photos of young heterosexual couples interacting with each other. Now, in the second experiment, participants looked at photos of the opposite sex. Then they were asked to quickly identify the photos as either eliciting a feeling of romantic love or sexual desire. Now, the whole time, of course, there was eye tracking software.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at what was happening. And for both men and women, the software revealed that when participants reported feelings of romantic love, they tended to dwell upon the face, which makes sense, right? The eyes. And but when they felt lusty, well, their gaze went south.
And that makes sense, right? But I also can't help but pick at this, especially with all the information we've just gone through, mm-hmm. and say, is there really that much difference between the two? If you really start looking under the hood of all that's going on when individual A and individual B lock eyes for the first time, or one looks at the other one's butt, however it ends up going down. I mean, ultimately, is there that much difference between the two? Like, there's just an exchange of stimuli. There's an initial gazing and scanning of the other organism to see if there's compatibility.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a whole, like, tail wagging the dog element to this.
Yeah, I mean, you could just boil it down to this person is feeling lovey and giving the love gaze because they're genetically inclined to mate and produce offspring and then die. And meanwhile, the lusty individual is fantasizing about getting this person back to their apartment because their genetic programming says that they need to mate with somebody, produce offspring, and then die.
Right. And then, eventually that works out or it doesn't, mm-hmm. it turns into love it sort of doesn't matter. Right.
Yeah.
But to me, this is interesting because it once again unpacks this idea that our unconscious and our experiences, our autobiography, every moment is influencing the decisions that we make and our perceptions. So it's lovely to say that, yes, I saw him and it was love at first sight. But there's so much more going on underneath that.
Oh, indeed.
Also, wanted to mention, in terms of really obvious studies and information that I think all of us probably know on some level, there was recently one about the best way to caress someone's cheek, like their their face.
Yeah.
Apparently it's moderate pressure moving at 1 inch per second.
Okay. Up or down?
I don't recall.
Yeah. With knuckles or fingers?
No, I think fingers.
Okay.
I think knuckles is, I don't know.
Well, I don't know.
That's
maybe
a whole other experience.
If you kind of go like that, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of nice, too. I was just stroking my face with my knuckles in case you guys are wondering what in the heck's going on.
All right, so there you have it. Now, if you want to check out more about this topic, be sure to check out stufftoblowyourmind.com. I'll make sure that the landing page for this episode includes links to related content, such as some of that other Valentine's Day lovey-dovey stuff about lingerie-wearing rats and the microbiology of a kiss. All of that will be on there, as well as some links out to some of these outside sources we've talked about, such as that TED Talk. And you can also check out our videos, our blog post, and links out to our various social media accounts, so you can follow us wherever you tend to hang out.
And we would love to hear from you guys. Does this information change your ideas of your experiences of love and perhaps even love at first sight? Let us know. You can email us at belowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.